Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to Octopulse, our Detroit News, Detroit Red Wings podcast. I'm Detroit News Assistant Sports Editor Mark Faulkner, and I'm joined by our Red Wings beat reporter Ted Colfin. Coming up, we'll hear from the NHL's youngest play-by-play announcer, Jason Ross Jr. He's a 23-year-old Farmington Hills native who became the first Black TV broadcaster with the Chicago Blackhawks earlier this year. But first, Ted, the Red Wings are back after the All-Star break, a home-and-home with the Philadelphia Flyers tomorrow night in Philadelphia, and then back here on Saturday afternoon. As for the All-Star game weekend in Las Vegas, do you think, Ted, the game will ever come to Little Caesars Arena? The All-Star game was here in 1980 at Joe Louis Arena, February the 5th, about 46 years ago, when the largest crowd ever at the time, 21,002 fans, gave Gordie Howe a four-minute standing ovation in pregame introductions. Do you think the game will ever come here, and do you think fans care about these All-Star games?
Well, that's the thing, Mark. I really don't think they're in a rush to get it because of the fact they're simply – it's just such a poor watch. It really is. I mean, I forced myself to watch a few minutes of it, but it was – it's not quite as bad as NFL's Pro Bowl, but, I mean, we're getting to that point. They have to do it for the sponsors and whatnot, and I'm sure there's a segment of fans, the kids that probably enjoy watching it, but it's such a difficult watch. It's not hockey, and you wonder how they can fix it going forward, but I think they're going to keep it in these warm weather destinations just by some of the better players to not pass on it and attend these games and play in them, but it's a difficult thing. I think the only All-Star game that really holds any sort of interest is baseball's, but even that one is waning a little bit. Over the years, they've just got on all these sports, they just don't have the interest or the magic that they used to have when we were all growing up watching them for some reason. But now I don't think. I mean, they give it a good chance. They give it a good opportunity with this 3-on-3 format. But I think as the years have gone on, I don't know about you, but it just doesn't hold it. Any wonder? I mean, going forward, there's rumors of maybe a World Cup this time of year in 2024. I think that would be a much better opportunity for people to. I think people would really get into that. I mean, I think they're missing the NHLers in the Olympics right now. I think people were looking forward to that. But the All-Star game as it is, I mean, you know, it is what it is. But I don't think a lot of people are dying to see it coming to Detroit or anywhere, really, for that matter.
Ted, let's hear now from Red Wings coach Jeff Blashill. Here you are asking Blashill about this six-day All-Star break and how it might affect the team when they hit the ice today.
Hey, Jeff, I'm curious. I mean, at the end of this week, you got that another six-day break or whatever it is. I mean, I guess there's two sides to it. You're never going to pass up some time off, but is it difficult to stop and start and stop and start like that consistently?
Well, the one thing I'd say is the whole league's doing it, you know, and so it's a fair thing across the league, and any, you know, any difficulty. I think personally that those days off are great for the players to refresh and let's attack the second, you know, now it's kind of it's past the second half, but basically the second half. So, you know, you'd like to have more than one practice before you play after having days off, but the whole league's in the same situation. So, you know, I'm not concerned about it. I think guys will take full advantage of it. I'll be at a youth hockey tournament in Chicago, and so my sunshine won't be the same. But you know, and then we'll get back at it come next Tuesday. So I'm not the least bit concerned about it.
So Ted, is it all downhill for the Red Wings now? They certainly exceeded expectations before the All-Star break, getting to four games over 500 after Moritz Seider's overtime winner here against the Islanders. That was back on December the 5th, a 4-3 win. So they were 13-9-3 in the first 25 games. In the next 22 games, they're five games under 500. It's 7-12-3. They also have one of the most difficult schedules after these games against the Flyers. They play in order: the Wild, the Rangers, the Avalanche, Maple Leafs, Hurricanes, Lightning, and Panthers. If they're not careful, Ted, they could really dig themselves a deep hole here, right?
See, that's the thing, Mark. It's incredible, this second half schedule. I know it just worked out the way it did, but all these teams a significant number of these teams that they're playing are having really big seasons, and they're among the top teams in the league. I think their record, they're going to have a difficult time, I would imagine, staying close to 500. Mm-hmm. It's the way it is. I mean, they're facing an avalanche of good teams, and I'm just not sure that they're equipped to play a lot of these teams closely on a night-to-night basis. This month of February, I mean, it just worked out the way it did. Obviously, they're going to make up some of the postponements. I think they hang, obviously, with Philadelphia, and Colorado is going to be a difficult game. But it's, boy, I tell you, it's just going to be a difficult test these last couple months, because there's a lot of hockey in a short period of time and against a lot of good teams.
Time now, Ted, for our interview segment. Today's guest is a broadcaster who used to practice calling play-by-play up in the press box at Little Caesars Arena. And now tomorrow night at age 23, Jason Ross Jr. will be calling the Blackhawks game against the Oilers in Edmonton. Joining us now is Detroit broadcaster Jason Ross Jr., who at the age of 23 became the first Black play-by-play announcer with the Chicago Blackhawks this season when he filled in for Blackhawks legend Pat Foley, who used to call hockey games at Michigan State and with the old Grand Rapids Owls of the IHL. Foley is about to retire after nearly 40 years in Chicago. Jason, welcome to the podcast. And before we talk about Pat Foley, I talked to one of your Detroit broadcasting mentors, Trevor Thompson, who most sports fans in this area know as that TV reporter for Bally Sports Detroit, covering the Red Wings, Tigers, and Pistons. And you know, Jason, he remembered meeting you for the first time, and we were just confirming it was 2016, the Horizon League basketball tournament at Joe Louis Arena. He says you were so young back then, you're 23 now, but that was like back 6 years ago. And, you know, he remembers distinctly from that day. He said he could see it in your eyes, your work ethic, what you were talking about. He could hear it in your voice. I'm wondering what you remember about that first meeting, Jason, and how has Trevor Thompson influenced your broadcasting career?
Wow. I vividly remember that first meeting too. I remember he and Matt Shepard, who is now the Tigers TV play-by-play announcer, spoke to, it was kind of a group of, at the time, people who were looking to get into broadcasting and were excited to do that. And I remember I was very excited that day, knowing I was going to meet Trevor, someone who I at that time hadn't met yet and had watched on TV for so many years. And I do remember sitting in the very front row with my notebook out, and I think I even brought my boards that day because I wanted to show Trevor my boards. And so yeah, I was in the row asking questions, had my boards, had my notebook, and I definitely vividly remember shaking Trevor's hand for the first time. And from that point on, he's been a mentor for me in life and in broadcasting, and we have become very good friends. It's so crazy to consider him a friend now. I used to look up to him watching him on TV, and now he's a friend of mine and a mentor of mine, and I've learned a lot when it comes to the craft of broadcasting from him. I remember I would pick his brain at Red Wings games and ask him, okay, in this scenario, what should you do here and what should you do here? Mm-hmm. And I've learned so much throughout the years from watching him. He's so composed on the air, so comfortable, so confident. I really admire that about him. And then he's just great as a person, as you know. So now I'll text him when I have some good news, and he's so happy for me. And it's really cool to see things coming full circle. And Trevor gave me an amazing opportunity when I was still in college to report for what we called Detroit Sports Media, which was we had a group of reporters, and I was one of them. And he gave me this opportunity to go to Red Wings games and Pistons games and Tigers games. And I would go, I'd film a report, and then I would edit the report, post it on our social media channels. And doing that was a way for me to, at the time, get reps in a professional environment and learn the ins and outs of being at a Red Wings game. And then when I finished that up, I'd go to the gondola at LCA, and I would call games into my recorder for practice. So I've probably done that hundreds of times, just going up in the gondola, nobody's listening, and calling the game into my recorder for practice. And at a certain point there, I had a friend join me on the Detroit sports media team. Her name is Jenna Rose. She's also working here with the Blackhawks now, and we do reports together, film them, edit them, then post them, and then I'd call games up in the gondola. We'd be there working on our craft, and Trevor gave us that opportunity, and it is so incredible to look back on that and see how things have progressed since then, because that really laid the foundation for what I'm doing now. And he's such a good mentor, such a good friend of mine. So can't thank Trevor enough.
In fact, Jason, we don't necessarily have breaking news. This podcast is scheduled to run on Tuesday, February the 8th. But earlier today, you sent Trevor some more good news. Not only did you broadcast on WGN, the Blackhawks game, back on January the 4th against the Avalanche, the Blackhawks, and then on January 8th, the TV game with the Golden Knights and the Blackhawks, but you're also flying out on the 8th, and then the 9th, the Blackhawks have a road trip, and you shared that news. Please let our audience know that there's more work ahead for you.
Yes, very exciting news. I'm super happy. So I will be doing our road trip, which will go through Edmonton, St. Louis, and Winnipeg for the Blackhawks on NBC Sports Chicago. So I'm super excited for that. As we record this, I found out earlier this morning, and I am elated. I'm at a loss for words. It's so incredible. I can't thank the people with the Blackhawks enough for this opportunity. It truly is an amazing privilege to be on their air, an Original Six franchise, and people who have been so incredibly kind to me and have afforded me this incredible, incredible opportunity. So many people within the organization who I'd love to thank. That's been like a family here. And I'm so happy every time I walk into the office or every time I'm going to a game. It truly is the light of my day when I get to go to the United Center. And now to be on their air and find out about this road trip is it's nothing short of incredible. It's a privilege. And again, can't thank the Blackhawks enough. And it was pretty cool to text Trevor that and text some other close friends that this morning. That I'll be doing the road trip. So we're very excited, very excited.
Yes, congratulations, Jason. You know, Trevor talked about a lot of other things too, and you were talking about all the practicing, co-hosting your show with Jenna Rose, and volunteering, and now working for the Big Ten Network, ESPN, this road trip. But looking back, Jason, why broadcasting when you were growing up in Detroit? And where did hockey fit into your plans?
You know, Mark, I think I always loved, maybe just via osmosis, listening to games on radio and TV, watching games. I think even when I was younger, I always loved having, before I could talk, my mom told me I just always loved having a game on. And I think just doing that throughout the years, just over and over again, I was around the middle school age when I started to, I would just watch game highlights all the time. And I started to realize there's a voice behind those highlights, and that person gets to be at the game and narrate the events and find the proper words to match the picture. And I think that I started to realize that was a job I could maybe do. So then from that point on, any book I could find on broadcasting, any video, any podcast, I was listening to it. I was reading it. I was consuming it. That's all I wanted to do. For some reason, I just did that all day long. And I still do that all day long. I just watch games all day trying to soak in. What can I learn here? What can I learn here? What's this broadcaster saying in this particular scenario? And I do that consistently because I think I genuinely love doing that. And it's really a craft, and it's so fun. And I'm having so much fun right now just talking to you about it. So it's something that I think from a very early age, I always loved being immersed in, whether it was at an event or watching a game. So that's kind of how it started. And then on the hockey side, I would watch games with different people. My dad is a person I would watch games with, and we'd go to the Joe at times, and I'd be just amazed at what essentially is kind of organized chaos out there. It's so fast. There's so much physicality, yet it's organized, and how quick you have to be mentally in the game of hockey. I think I loved that. I played a little bit for the Livonia Knights when I was younger, and I'm definitely glad I stuck with the broadcasting side as opposed to playing. But I really enjoy the game, and it's my favorite sport to call. So I think it's such a mental challenge when you're calling it, and I enjoy trying to succeed at that mental challenge that is calling hockey. So it's a lot of fun, and I think that's where all that came together.
Jason, let's fast forward to your connection with Pat Foley in your first game in the NHL. as a fill-in following in the footsteps of this Hall of Famer. He'll retire, as we said from the outset, at the end of the year. He's still working some of the games on NBC Sports, Chicago. What was that like, though, that first game? You've got others coming up, though. When you got the call, the preparations, the game itself, and when you look back, how do you think you did?
Gosh, I will start to start off here. I just have to give so much admiration for what Pat has done here in Chicago and in the game of hockey. His voice is obviously synonymous with Blackhawks hockey, and he has become an institution here in the Windy City, and so has John Weideman on radio. Both of them have done such a fantastic job, incredibly kind people. I've gotten to chat with Pat on a few different occasions, and met him the first time I went up into the press box at United Center, and he's such a great guy. I love the smile on his face. I love listening to him call games, and I love his energy in the big moments. He's someone else who I love to study. Love studying John Weideman on radio. He's become a good mentor of mine as well. Wonderful person. I met John a few years back in Detroit after a Red Wings Blackhawks game, and he's been a great friend ever since. I chatted with John a couple of days ago, and both of the broadcasters here on radio and TV, the analysts as well. You look at Troy Murray and Eddie Olczyk and what they've done here. So fantastic at what they do. So I think just trying to, I guess, for me, stepping in, realizing that sitting in that chair is a privilege and having that opportunity is a privilege. And for me, when I did the game on TV in Las Vegas, I think the buildup to that, of it being a Saturday night, of it being Marc-Andre Fleury's return to Vegas, was something where I just said to myself, this is a lot of fun and we can have fun tonight. Sure. And I think people like to... This is, for me, a broadcasting philosophy, not only with hockey, but any sport, especially on a Saturday night. I think that, especially in Las Vegas, I think that you can build it up as this is something where the fan is, they maybe worked all week, right? And they want to have something to step aside and enjoy themselves with. So let's give them an enjoyable product. Let's make it fun. Let's do social media videos before the game. Let's hop in the booth and have smiles on our faces. And I think working with Colby Cohen that night was fantastic. He really made me feel relaxed. And that's what we did. We had fun and the game was great. We had a Blackhawks win that night. And it was fantastic to see Fleury go back and get the win. There was excellent buildup right from the start. T-Mobile Arena did a wonderful job of kind of in their pregame doing the Marc-Andre Fleury ceremony before the game. And that was so well-deserved. He did in Vegas and everything he meant to that community. And I remember after the game, there were floods of people waiting for him outside of the arena. So being able to have that as a narrative was really cool and just kind of flowed with it and got into my pace and my rhythm. And it was wonderful. I had such an incredible night. There are some really cool stories from after the game where the team gave me the game puck that was used.
And oh, really?
Afterwards. Yeah. I have that. I'll often send you a picture of that. I have that and the puck from the Colorado game that I did a few days prior. So I did Colorado versus Chicago, for people that don't know, on WGN Radio a few days before that with Kaylee Chelios, who is fantastic at what she does, and a fellow Michigander there as well. So Kaylee was great to work with. She's a good friend of mine and is doing fantastic on studio and radio and TV. She's just so, so good at what she does. And it was fantastic to be a part of that crew that night. It was really, really fun. I still have not really properly soaked that in yet to continue the story of what happened after the game. Several of the players actually walked up to me afterwards and congratulated me. And I didn't know how they knew I had become the first Black TV play-by-play broadcaster for our team that night. But they found out and congratulated me after the game, which is something that I'm smiling about thinking of right now because it didn't feel real. Our captain, Jonathan Taves, who was a great guy, walked up to me after the game and shook my hand. And that was so cool. That was beyond cool. So that entire night is unforgettable.
You know, it was interesting, the angle about the Black broadcaster, because when I talked to Trevor, you know, he said it's a bit of a shame, Mark, that we're still talking about Black broadcasters and Black hockey players, especially during Black History Month here in February. Trevor said players like Giovanni Smith of the Red Wings really don't like being singled out because of the color of the skin. He said everyone just wants to be recognized for the work they put in, what they've accomplished with the skill set they bring to a team. What does it mean, Jason, to be the first Black broadcaster in Hawks history, which goes all the way back to 1926?
Yeah, you know, it really, I think, soaked in after the game. I found out midway through the first period of that game.
Okay. Yep.
And I think afterwards I started getting messages from people saying that you could be an inspiration for the next generation of broadcasters who maybe wants to see someone that looks like them on the air on an NHL game. And we don't see a ton of that around, you know, Trevor in Detroit and Everett in Seattle. And I think that it really, afterwards, when I got those messages from people, I think that's when it soaked in. And it was meaningful from the first time I found out midway through the first period.
Mm-hmm.
Receiving those messages from people really made me feel as though that was an honor and that was a privilege. And with to do it with this team that, as you mentioned, how far back the history goes, it really is still soaking in. And I, again, can't thank them enough for the opportunity they've given me. It's a very forward-thinking and innovative organization that is willing to do that. And I really am so thankful for everyone here because they put me in that chair and I can't thank them enough for that. But it's an honor to be able to say that I was the first Black TV play-by-play broadcaster for the franchise. And as Trevor mentioned there, hopefully we can start to normalize that and make it more common. And if there's another younger Black broadcaster who wants to see someone on TV, they can maybe turn on an NHL game and see that. And it was pretty cool to know that they could see me that night being in that chair. So, yeah.
You know, Jason, and that leads me to my final question about being, ironically, a role model. You're only 23. You met Trevor, as we said from the outset, when you were 16. I think he used the words templates that you had with all this information. And he is just so proud of the work that you put in that he said a lot of people, they don't grind it out, that if nothing else, that is something you could teach others. But also on your LinkedIn page, Jason, you talk about humility and teamwork and that those are key attributes as well. So I wonder if you are giving advice to others, whether it's a young Black hockey fan who is considering something like this. What are your thoughts about that, Jason?
I think that in terms of advice for anyone wanting to, I guess, get into the game of hockey, or if it's broadcasting or any sort of really career path, I love what Trevor mentioned there about grinding it out and
sure.
really the time and effort and genuine work to do that. I think what I love about this field is that for me, putting in the time and the effort is fun, which doesn't make it feel like a grind. But in hindsight, looking back on it, I did put in a lot of time into this, and I poured in what I can't even think of how many all-nighters that I just stayed up all night and grinding away on prepping for a game that I might not be getting paid for, but I'm still going to go do it because I want to have another rep and I want to look back on that rep and say, okay, we're going to build on this and get better for the next one. And I think that doing that, it for me at the time, it felt like something that I needed to do. I don't know. There wasn't really any other option. It was, I want to improve at this and we need to put in work to do that. So I would just do it nonstop. And I'd go to games, and if we were getting there at 8 a.m. and leaving at 1 a.m., I'm perfectly fine with that. If we're getting there, you know, whatever time, leaving whatever time, it felt like so much fun. And looking back on it, a lot of hours went into that. Mm-hmm. But I think you need to put in those hours in order to be good at your craft. And I'm still working very much on that, trying to put in as many hours as I can each day to work on my philosophies. Okay, what am I going to do in this scenario? Where should my eyes be here in a hockey game? In this scenario, where should my energy be? The little nuanced details that can separate the play-by-play. I think that's something I really enjoy working on. So you apply that to any craft for any younger person trying to get into a field. It's really important. And then to step away from the individual side, you mentioned mm-hmm. the LinkedIn there. I'd like to put that quote up because it's something I learned from John Forslund, actually, who now does the Seattle Kraken on TV, that, you know, we are just one part of a big team that makes this show possible. And there are a lot of people behind the scenes in the offices here in Chicago that are making this franchise a well-oiled machine, and that on the broadcast side, you look at it, and then on TV, you have a director, you have a producer, you have your graphics people, you have people in audio, and it's a lot of people coming together for one show that you see on TV. And maybe you see the play-by-play and the analyst and the sideline reporter on TV, but all those people behind the scenes are truly what make the show possible. So I think, like in being an athlete, you develop team chemistry, and then you practice throughout the week. And hopefully when game time rolls around, you can win the game and succeed. But there's a lot of time that goes into that. So I really enjoy, I think at the end of the day, Mark, the time and effort that goes into that, because now I'll be doing my games as we record this next week, but there's a lot of prep that's going to go into that beforehand in order to make those broadcasts successful to people that are watching. So yeah, there's a lot of time and effort that goes into that, but I enjoy putting in that time and effort.
Jason, thanks again for your time talking to us on the podcast about Trevor Thompson, Pat Foley, your Detroit hockey roots, what it takes to reach this level of broadcasting, and all the best. Best of luck on that upcoming Chicago road trip.
Thank you so much, Mark. Really appreciate your time. Thank you for having me on. And gosh, I hope we get to chat in person one day. This is fantastic.
Our thanks again to Jason Ross Jr. Now let's hear from Red Wings defenseman Mark Stahl, who talked before the All-Star break about how they've got to tighten up defensively, making safe plays, living to see another day, as Jeff Blashill says. Here's Mark Stahl.
We don't really have it as a team. We just got to, you know, find a way not to hurt ourselves and be happy with nothing going on. And, you know, I think we can learn that going into the second half of the game, just get tighter and more tight checking and harder to play. And, you know, we got to regroup and gear up for that.
Ted, listening to Mark Stahl there, it almost sounds like having another coach on the ice. He was using those terms like being happy with nothing going on, learning to manage the puck, building on shifts, getting the momentum back. Do you think Jeff Blashill will be able to get this team to be as consistently hard to play against these other teams, better teams, in February and March? Certainly at home they have, but not so much on the road.
Well, the inconsistency, Mark, it just seemed like the last couple weeks before this All-Star break, there were a couple of games that they played really well defensively, played the way they needed to, and beat a really good Pittsburgh team, beat a good Anaheim team. But then those games against Toronto, the last game against Los Angeles was a little bit of an eye-opener. Los Angeles has been here and thoroughly outplayed them, basically, I thought. Just need a consistent level, especially defensively, like you said. We need to get some secondary scoring. That's been an issue all season. Things that need to be done. I mean, if they want to be competitive this second half, you're right. Defensively, there has to be they need to somehow just too many chances against, too many quality chances against they were given up. But they are going to get Jacob Vrana here in the near future. It's almost like adding, you know, a premium goal scorer at the trade deadline. They haven't had him all year. He's getting healthier. He should be out. Sounds like he's going to be ready to play by the end of the month. That's a nice little ingredient to add to your lineup. He's going to score goals. He's going to be a good – it'll be interesting to see what kind of juice he provides. Is that going to be enough for them to really challenge for a playoff spot? I doubt it. But that's a nice addition to your lineup, especially if he plays the way here at the end of last season. So, you know, that should help the secondary scoring we're talking about.
And finally, let's hear from Pat Verbeek, who was hired as general manager of the Anaheim Ducks, a team he said is midway through their rebuild with players like Trevor Zegras, Jamie Drysdale, and Mason McTavish, three players, three guests on our show. Here's Verbeek on Steve Yzerman's reaction when he got the job.
He was very excited for me, and that made me very happy. Mainly because we've been working together for so long. It's always tough to kind of step away and start to do things on your own. But at the same time, it's very exciting for me to become the general manager. There's been a lot of we've gone, you know, through a lot together, and now it's, you know, I'm hoping that, you know, I can do the job that he did in Detroit and in Tampa and build the Anaheim Ducks into a contender.
So Ted Verbeek is gone, but Steve Yzerman added Nicklas Lidström and promoted Sean Horkoff into Verbeek's role. Verbeek's Ducks are 7 games over .500, so you can see why he would say they're midway through their rebuild. The Wings are 1 game under .500. We're still a ways away, aren't we, though, from the Wings getting to the Ducks level, or are the Wings closer to that midway through the rebuild and on their way up?
I don't think they're that far away from Anaheim, Mark. I don't know what you feel, but I don't think they're that far, but it's a great opportunity for Pat Verbeek. I mean, no question, that does seem like an organization on the rise. I think they've surprised a lot of people. Now, that's another situation where the second half of the season, they have a tough schedule, and there's teams below them with plenty of games in hand, like Edmonton especially. So maintaining that playoff spot's going to be difficult, but that's a good roster. I mean, Wings have played them twice. They've seen how deep they are with young talent. And I feel good for Pat Verbeek. I mean, that's a good opportunity for him. He's been a plugger. He's worked a long time in the front offices with Steve Yzerman, done a great job. Really good to see him get this opportunity. And frankly, and Sean Horkoff to replace him in his role. Another guy who's been very impressive in the front office. He's done a nice job with the Wings. It's a good opportunity for Horky too. So it's always nice to see good people rewarded in that way.
Thanks, Ted. And that'll do it for episode 66 of our Detroit News, Detroit Red Wings podcast. You can check out your stories at DetroitNews.com, on Octopulse, our Facebook page, on Twitter, Instagram stories, and Snapchat. Thanks again, everyone, for listening, rating, and reviewing our podcast. Ted and I will be back soon for another episode of Octopulse.